And welcome back to the Bicycle Indiana podcast, Life Behind Bars. Margaret B. here, Executive Director. On this month's, so this week's episode, we're chatting with two individuals that are on the board of a local not-for-profit organization that involves Indiana and Kentucky. When I first moved here, I kind of dabbled in the cyclocross scene and was introduced to the governing body of sanctioning for races called USAC or USA Cycling. Stay tuned. We have a full episode specifically on USAC and how to get involved and how to become an official or how to, you know, be part of that organization. But this particular episode, we talk with two individuals that are trying to bring back racing, sanctioned racing, in Indiana and Kentucky. So I hope you enjoyed this discussion. And always remember, please go to our website, www.bicycleindiana.org. Become a member today. You can do that in two simple ways. One, you can go on our website and join that way, as well as another easy way is to go to your local BMV, get a license plate for Indiana Bicycle Coalition. That is another way that supports us, and we greatly appreciate it. So our organization fully runs on members, and we really look forward to meeting you at our future events, as well as I hope you enjoy this discussion. All right. Have a good day. Welcome back to the Bicycle Indiana podcast, Life Behind Bars. Margaret B. here, Executive Director. I've got two great individuals on this call today that are going to talk about an organization that I personally had no idea what it was when I first moved here to Indiana. And obviously, as I dove into the racing scene, I still never heard about this organization. But today is the day where I get to learn a lot about a cycling association. So I have Justin Floyd and Abner. I'm going to try to pronounce your last name. I don't even want to do it. What is it?
Miralda.
Okay, there we go. Welcome to the call. Justin, do you want to, I'm going to put you on the spot. Do you want to take a moment to introduce yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having us. I am Justin Floyd. I'm the president of the Indiana Kentucky Cycling Association, or as we sometimes abbreviate it to INCY. Pleased to be here. I've been involved with cycling, probably since, 2017, and have served on this board now. This will be the third year. I was previously the secretary under the last board, and I've been serving as president now for about 9 months.
And what type of racing do you like to do? I should have added that at the beginning.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a great question. I've dabbled in a little bit of everything. I would say right now is mostly road and track.
Nice. Abner, you want to take a moment?
Sure. So my name is Abner Miralda. I am an at-large member for INCY, and I am really representing the interest of race directors on the board. I've been racing bikes since I moved to college without a car, got a bike as transportation, and then got hooked. So I've raced every type of bike racing there is. And I would say that I have had my best competitive results in dirt racing, long marathon mountain bike racing, and cyclocross.
Nice.
And so that's where I mostly gravitate towards.
Nice. Well, welcome. I don't think I've officially ever met you, Abner. Justin, I've met you a couple times, but I feel like I've seen either your face or your name, something on whether it's cyclocross or something down in Louisville. And I've ventured down there a couple times. It's really cool. So welcome to the call. Like I said, we're going to dive in talking about INCY, which originally Sarah Larson, who used to be on your board, would say INCY. And I was like, what is INCY? And then I wrote it out and was like, oh, Indiana, Kentucky. Okay. So anyway, well, Margaret's on the same page now. So let's talk about INCY. Justin, I'm going to put you on the spot. You kind of already talked a little bit about INCY, but let's talk a little bit more about maybe the nitty and the gritty of what INCY is.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are what's referred to by USA Cycling as a local association, and there are about miscounting, but I think there's about 32 local associations throughout the United States that represent like different geographical regions, you know, across the United States. So Michigan has one, Ohio has a cycling association. Some are multiple states combined like ours. And we are a volunteer board that has been given the power to help promote and further competitive racing in our region. And we're voted on by active USA Cycling members at the time of our elections, which is every 2 years. So it's usually December, January, somewhere around those times. So if you have an active license, you get an email from us through some sort of probably survey company or something like that. And, you know, anyone that wants to participate or run for one of our board positions, which we have, you know, the kind of standard probably boards, president, vice president, secretary, treasurer, and we have several at-large members. I think we're at three, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, it's open to anyone that's passionate about helping, you know, further the mission of competitive cycling. And we're here for that.
That's great. I know, and again, please correct me, but can you talk a little bit more about the specific history of it? Like, when did it, and again, you might have already said this and I'll have to edit it out. But when did it officially start?
That's a really good question. Long before I became involved in cycling, I know that we have been, as far back as I can remember, I would say into the early 2000s, if not 90s. I know that it's been a longstanding local association. And you know, local associations come and go, unfortunately, sometimes. Like for some areas of the country, they have maybe not a lot of competitive racing and they've gone dormant. Yeah. We've had a long history of people being involved, you know, from names that have been around the scene for a long time. Curtis Tolson, who has run the Texas Roadhouse cycling team, has been, you know, a board member in the past. So it's, yeah, I can't, I actually don't know the exact start date. And Abner, I don't know if you do either.
Yeah. Long time ago. That's great. Abner, did you want to add anything about the purpose that, you know, what INCI does?
Sure. So in general, local associations across the country are kind of tasked by USA Cycling of being the local chapters that kind of speak on behalf of USA Cycling, or kind of the boots on the ground. You know, different local associations in different part of the country have kind of different flavors of that. Some are very hands-on, you know, Bicycle Racing Association of Colorado, BRAC, as it's called, has an additional fee to the USA Cycling license. They are their own kind of governing body, and they show up to every sanctioned race with a trailer, you know, all sorts of race production materials. Then there's other local associations that are very much more loose, like North Carolina, for example, was so loose that when COVID hit, the board dissolved, and you know, nobody picked it up until about a year ago. So it kind of depends on how active each board is, how ambitious they want to be, and really how they sell that message of being a local chapter of the USA Cycling mission of getting people to race their bikes.
Absolutely. So I told Justin before you jumped on the call that I have a goal is to meet with two USAC officials to talk about how to become an official, because obviously that's a struggle that we're going to talk about here in a little bit, but also just what is USAC. So let's kind of briefly talk about that. Justin, what is USA Cycling, also known as USAC?
Yeah, so it's... it's a national governing body, and maybe people who are out there familiar with national governing bodies from other sports, USA Track and Field, you know, it's the pathway for both developing aspiring riders, as well as the organization that selects who represents cycling disciplines at the Olympics. So anything from your smallest grassroots competitive racing to the highest level of international competition, you know, where you're getting your gold medals at the World Championships, for example, on the road, which just happened last Sunday or Saturday and Sunday for the men and women. So it, I don't know. I mean, that's at its core, it's that. It's a lot more than that, but that's, I think that's the most generic definition of what they are.
Yeah. And there's different sanctioning bodies. Cause I remember when I first started helping with my local team, we ran the Monrovia Time Trial Series, if you remember that. And that was run, I think my friend Joe had USAC, but he also had, what was it called? Like ABR. Is that right? Yeah. Is my memory? Yeah, okay.
The American Bicycle Racing.
It's like super old school.
It's very old school. They still have a very, very small presence. And there are other I'll use the word like rogue governing bodies that exist in different parts of the United States for different reasons. But USA Cycling is the overarching, you know, kind of it's the main it is the main
the
governing
champion.
Body. So yeah. It won out long, long ago. And people, you know, it's like if you have any interest in, you know, as a junior athlete, for example, we have a lot of great junior athletes in our region that, you know, their goal is to go to national championships and to represent potentially the U.S. in races in Europe. And the only way that you can do that and represent the United States is through USA Cycling.
Yeah.
And there's no other body that you can do that for. So.
A lot of those juniors have lapped me in racing.
Same. I've been dropped by many of them. So.
Yeah. No, that's great. I guess my next question and topic is talking about racing in the Midwest. I started kind of later in life. I wish I started earlier. I played soccer and then I discovered cyclocross and I thought, oh, this is fun. But again, I didn't, as an athlete, didn't pay to become a USAC member because I just didn't see for me enough racing to justify traveling all these places and everything like that. But what can you describe to our listeners, maybe Abner, if you want to describe to our listeners, what is racing like in the Midwest when it comes to, I guess, USA Cycling events?
Sure. So you also prompted a lot of other thoughts and I have more things to say about the prior question of what USA Cycling is. I guess I'll fold those thoughts into this question of what is it like to race in Indiana and Kentucky and in our part of the country. And I guess maybe comparing USA Cycling events versus non-USA Cycling events. So I guess the overall mission of USA Cycling, and if you look at their mission statement on their website, is to help promote competitive cycling in the country. USA Cycling became a thing when NORBA and the USA Cycling Federation merged, which, if I'm not mistaken, was sometime in the 90s. And they are a nonprofit organization really tasked with identifying the next talent to send to the Olympics. Along with that comes the grassroots responsibility of forming a pyramid of developing those young athletes to develop them into those next Olympic champions. And the way to do that is also to bring in adults to participate, to race, give them a place or an arena to compete in. And the standardization that is required to do all of that is what benefits us as race directors and what benefits racers as well that race across the country in different regions. Because the reality is we don't have, 10 races every weekend within an hour drive from one another. It's not like soccer where you could do an adult league on Monday, an indoor league on Tuesday, a co-ed league on Wednesday. These are kind of the more, it's a little bit more of a organized and structured, setup, kind of designed to bring the cream to the top. So racing in the Midwest, I've raced all across the country. And that's something that I know that when I sign up for a USA Cycling event, I know what I'm going to get. I know that the rules are standard. I know that the skill levels between Cat 4, Cat 5, Cat 3, et cetera, Cat 1 is all going to be standardized. And I kind of know what level of competition I'm getting myself into. And from an event production standpoint, I know that there's always going to be qualified officials. I know that results are going to be posted in one specific place. I know that there is insurance coverage and liability, both protecting the riders and the race organization. And so it's just overall a more serious, you know, setup that unfortunately costs money, and people like to complain about how much USA Cycling events cost. But that standardization and that structure takes resources to maintain, to upkeep. And it's something that I see as invaluable to the bike racing world. And, you know, there are some people who have decided they can do it their own way better, and, you know, more power to them. I'm happy for it, because at the end of the day, if there's more bike races going on, there's more people getting into the sport, and hopefully over time we will be able to sell them on the idea that yes, the standardization of USA Cycling events, of categories and whatnot, is actually a trustworthy setup that they can come into the fold and take advantage of. That was a very long-winded answer, and so now I'm going to give you a more individual answer of what it's like to race in the Midwest. Every region of the country has different, I guess, interests. You know, if you go to Wisconsin, the mountain biking is going to be very different than the mountain biking in Indiana, than in Tennessee or Colorado. So the terrain lends itself to different types of riding. And I would say there are a lot of people in this part of the country that do not like to go uphill. because there isn't a lot of uphill, there's a lot of people uncomfortable with going downhill as well. So, you know, there's a lot of fast, flat riding in our part of the country. And that has kind of, and the weather lends itself really well to cyclocross and to road racing. Gravel is kind of burgeoning. There's lots of unpaved roads in Indiana and very, very, very few in Kentucky. So gravel isn't much of a thing in Kentucky. But either way, I think it stands true to say that people are friendly here, just as they are everywhere else. So find a race and, you know, give it a try.
Yeah. I don't know. I know Justin might know a little bit about my work history, but I ran the Indiana Nike League here, and it was new, and it was this kind of mysterious beast when it came to Indiana compared to the other states that, you know, Nike had. And you said it perfect, compared to, you know, Wisconsin, where they have Trek and they have all these trails and, you know, lots of mountain, you know, terrain. But I always saw, when it came to specifically mountain biking and with the Nike League in Indiana, was cycling was almost kind of, you know, this different sport, because Indiana was a traditional ball and stick sport, meaning there's cross country, there's basketball, there's baseball, and then all these trails that are all over in Indiana. Maybe it is the same in Kentucky. I know Kentucky has a league, but it just seemed very fractured to me. And so trying to get into the schools to get kids on bikes, on mountain bikes, it was like, well, now I'm competing with basketball and, you know, baseball, and then all the different rules when it comes to, you know, kids and sports. But anyway, that's why I wanted you on the call, because you gave a great answer. Justin, did you want to say anything?
No, I think Abner hit it on the head. And you know, in speaking to that, like, you know, the topography and like what's available in different regions and what then we have as a result in terms of like competitive racing, right? So like, it comes down to a lot of these other grassroots organizations that are like maintaining trails, right? Mm-hmm. For mountain bike racing to even happen, or organizations that are maintaining, you know, cyclocross courses. You know, we have Louisville Cyclocross Collective, who maintains like Eva Bandman Park, I believe. And, you know, cyclocross race doesn't happen without all those volunteers. And it's like, we have gravel roads for now in a lot of Indiana, or in some areas of Indiana. But then, you know, that depends on population expansion and the, you know, Department of Public Works and when they want to pave a road and when they don't. And, you know, we're very fortunate, though, to have a representation of like all of the cycling disciplines here in Indiana and Kentucky. We're lucky enough to have one of the few velodromes that still exists in the country here in Indianapolis, and have a robust like programming. You know, we're lucky to have, I don't even know what else I'm trying to think. There's oh, BMX. We have plenty of BMX. I know tracks, yeah. Within Indiana and Kentucky. So it's like, we do have, unlike other areas of the country, we do have a representation of all the different disciplines that you could imagine in cycling. And that's something really cool and really unique. Like, we may not have mountains, you know, but it's like, we have a lot of other cool stuff to offer, and that's great.
I interviewed two individuals about BMX earlier this year, or was it last year? But Brandon Medley, I talked to him, and he's a huge BMXer. I want BMX to come back. Like, I want it to come back full force like it was in the 80s. And I was on a quest to figure out and learn why it kind of died off. And I did. So listeners, there are two episodes on our podcast episodes talking about BMX. And then Carly Kane, who is also an elite BMXer who is super badass. But yeah, no, BMX is really neat, and I'm really happy to have this discussion. So my next kind of topic is, I'm looking at your race calendar. Obviously there's a variety of different races that are part of your calendar, that connect with you. Is there a fee at all to be part of Inky? And I'm sorry if you already answered this.
No, there's no fee to be part of it. If you are a license holder of USA Cycling and you live within Indiana or Kentucky, you are automatically a member of Inky. We do rely sometimes on, you know, donations either from individuals or organizations to keep our mission moving forward. But there's no like flat fee for members.
So there's Road Cross. I have a friend. I'll say his name, Terry Mitchell. Terry Mitchell. But anyway, he always jokes with me. He goes, "Road is dead, Margaret." And I'm like, I don't know about that. I mean, it maybe, I don't know. What do you guys think? Is road racing dead in at least in Indiana? Maybe. I don't know.
Well, do you mean like road racing in the typical sense of like a road race, or are you including like road events such as like criteriums?
I don't know. Well, if we could get Terry Mitchell on the call right now, I would say maybe road racing is what I interpret it as, because there's crit racing, but sure, not really a ton of road racing.
It is funny you say that. It is logistically a lot harder in the US to put on a road race. You start involving a lot of different, government agencies, mm-hmm, potentially as roadblocks, but it actually has been making a comeback in our region. We have been fortunate enough to have a long-standing race at Fat and Skinny Tire Festival that's been doing a road race for its 20 years of existence. We've had universities recently, Purdue University and IU specifically, that have annually held a road race now for the last several years. In the past, we've had in the not so distant past, University of Louisville Cycling Club, Abner, thank you, that's hosted road races. And now we actually have, as of this year, and from my understanding, continuing into next year, is a multiple road race series event that's being held in Kentucky, which this year involved, I believe, four races. And I'm not sure exactly sure the format next year. But that's, you know, for road racing, I would say that's pretty good. If you can get, I don't know if there's any region or, you know, state in the country that would have 6, possibly 7 road races in a calendar year. And that's just road racing, like you said, not crits, which we have, you know, also as well. So I think it's making a comeback, and I think it's exciting, because it's a, you know, when people watch cycling on TV, mm-hmm, that's what they see. Right. And they're like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
And it is very fun, but it, like I said, it's very hard to have a sustainable business plan or race plan to make that happen year after year, because, you know, as Abner said, these things cost money and sometimes are expensive. So
they do. I remember David Alexander at the Purdue Boilermaker. He was messaging me about NDOT and how NDOT wasn't responding. And I kind of laughed. I said, oh, it's NDOT. But anyway, Abner, did you want to add anything about the Kentucky kind of scene that, you know, Justin kind of talked about Indiana?
Yeah. So, really I'm Indiana. I live in Jeffersonville.
Oh, okay.
I grew up in Southern Indiana. So I went to the University of Louisville. So I call myself a Kentuckiana, and, it's really interesting. So something that is a challenge for Inky, and is really for a very long time, it has been really just the Indiana Bicycle Racing Association. And Kentucky was kind of tacked in there and thrown in because Kentucky simply over the years has not had a strong enough or robust enough network to stand alone on its own. And so, you know, Kentucky, with how strong the Indiana racing community is, really kind of built and nestled around the Cycloplex in Indianapolis and all of the industry partners that come along with it. This is something that, you know, Justin alluded to, but everything in the bike racing world is dependent on infrastructure that is already there. Anything that I can do as a race organizer, race director, is dependent on how ready the market, how ready the community, how ready the racers are themselves to participate in a race like that, in whatever I choose to bring to market. So a perfect example is the Cyclocross Resurrection. So I'm the race director for Cyclocross Resurrection and for Storm Eve Abandonment. And the name of it is kind of a joke because I moved away from this area before the pandemic and spent several years away from the state. Came back during the pandemic, or I guess towards the tail end of it. And I realized that the park that had historically been used for cyclocross and is, up until it was held in Arkansas, the only place outside of Europe that world championships had ever been held, Eva Bandman Park, had fallen into disuse, into disrepair. There was very little racing in general, but cyclocross being such an important part of the cycling community in Louisville, and the industry as a whole also moving away from cyclocross. I mean, there's countless brands that no longer make a cyclocross bike. They've taken the Specialized Crux, which was this incredible cyclocross machine, and slackened it out. And now they call it a gravel bike. It's no longer the same beast as it used to be. Bike manufacturer, tire manufacturers are stopping to make, you know, cyclocross tires and so on and so forth. So the joke was to revive cyclocross, to bring it back from the dead. And the tagline was, it's not dead yet. you know, that's something that we had all of the pieces in place and there was enough nostalgia remaining that we could kind of, you know, put our hands around that tiny little flame and just keep it from going completely out. We had a park that was designated a cyclocross venue by the city, and we can very easily get permits to organize events there. We already had loads of people in the community who had cyclocross bikes or had old cyclocross equipment that has all been sold very cheaply to people who are new and getting into the sport. There's the community. There's enough people who still remember the good old days of cyclocross who are willing to volunteer and help clean up the park. And all of that is something that as a race director, I have simply been able to say, hey, look, come on, guys, let's get the band back together. So Kentucky has never really had that culture. And so it's very, very difficult to say, let's put a velodrome in Lexington, or let's start doing a road race in Paducah. There's inklings here and there. There is a non-USA cycling event that I really want to bring into the fold in Eastern Kentucky. It's a big endurance mountain bike race. Well, it's not big, but it is a growing grassroots event, and it's such a big hard, difficult undertaking of a race, that they are building a community around it that is then having this downstream and ripple effect that is helping a lot of other little communities through the state. So this is where I'm going to put on my old man hat and say road racing is not dead. It's just people aren't tough enough for it.
You hear that, Terry Mitchell? Say it again, Abner. Road is not dead.
Road's not dead. People just aren't tough enough for it. And it's because racing is hard. You have to have a certain level of fitness. You have to have a certain level of commitment. You have to put in the time to improve your technical skill set to even be a Cat 5 cyclist. People like to say that being a Cat 5 is dangerous. I challenge you to do a Cat 5 race. And tell me if it's the people around you that are dangerous, or if it's you that are dangerous, you know, because maybe you yourself haven't developed the skill set to be safe in that situation. So that's why Cat 5 exists. So that way people who are at a similar skill level, at a similar experience level, fitness level, can compete against one another, learn from one another, safely, really safely, and progress through the sport. As a race director, I've organized road races, mountain bike races, cross races, and every major accident, all the severe accidents I've ever seen have come in the elite race. Because the elite races are fast, and a lot of these individuals are racing for prize money. They have sponsors, they have commitments, they have other reasons to go for the hole that maybe wasn't there. They have a lot of external motivations, a lot of factors that push them to do a lot of things that may be deemed unsafe or risky. Whereas your Cat 5 is just trying to have a good time, trying to have fun. They're testing themselves in their local race, or they have decided they've fallen in love with the sport and they have the infrastructure at home to train on safe roads. They have a nice enough bike. They can maintain their equipment. They have a supportive network around them. And so all of these things kind of play a role to building the ideal racer who then, you know, commits to do 1, 2, 5, 10 races a year and progress through those ranks. Absolutely. That was a huge rant.
No, it was great. And to piggyback, I mean, I interviewed Marissa Donner and David Palmer and talked about OBCX and how they're kind of reviving OBCX because COVID kind of, you know, and just in general, I felt OBCX kind of died and then it came back to life, and they have a huge schedule of events. So yeah. Totally, totally get it. Justin, did you want to? No,
it's great. I mean, I was just looking, you know, at the schedule again the other day, and it's like, you know, OBCX exists beyond our borders. It's not just, they have races in Ohio as well, but I think within our region they're have 9 race days in Indiana and Kentucky. So like, even if you didn't want, you know, if you lived somewhere in central Indiana, you can race that many times on the grass and the dirt and drive, you know, 2 hours max, which is amazing. And we've been throwing around a lot of like categorization, like Cat 5, Cat 4, Cat 3 stuff. And that's like, it's a little bit of like slang, but just like, so for anybody listening, there's a structured system within USA Cycling that it's like, if you are a novice, this is your first time racing, you've never raced in the past, you start out as a Category 5. They try to rename it novice, but I think no one really calls it that just because, like, you know, but there is a system of points based off of like placings and stuff. So it's, you know, off of your fitness and results is the way that you progress through the system to become a 4, 3, a 2. And the highest category is a 1. That's like our domestic elite racing scene. So, so that's what, you know, we're talking about guaranteeing, like, you know, the people around you, like, okay, like these are people that are of my fitness level. These are people that I can compete with, and you're not, you know, sometimes it's nice, like there are styles of racing that are more open. Gravel racing is one of those where it's like, you know, you can be a new racer and you may be very, very fit and be able to like compete with someone who is elite. But, you know, a lot of times, especially on like small closed technical courses, it's, you know, in mountain biking, you want to be sure that you are around people that you trust to be able to like have the same kind of skills that you do. That's USA Cycling's terminology for our categorization system.
I want to take a moment to give an applause, you know, applaud you, Abner, for being a race director. I used to do it. It's stressful. It's a lot of passion and you pour your heart and soul into it. So kudos to you. We interviewed Wes Kendall, who puts on Pedal Putnam, which is a road event that has timing. But same kind of thing. I mean, it really takes a village to put on these events. But on top of it, like you have mentioned multiple times, like getting the right people, getting the right volunteers, but also creating that structure so that way people come back and they want to feel safe and encouraged to try something new or try the event again. So for all of our listeners, if you have never volunteered at a race or an event, please do it. Give back. It's really important because a lot of these events, it is all volunteer run and we need them to happen in order to boost people getting out on bikes. So
I already forgot what the original question was.
I kind of did too.
Is road dead?
Is road dead? Races? Did you want to talk about any more races that maybe Inky is hosting?
Yes. So I'll clarify. Let me give you a more clarified, tailored answer. And let me just redact everything that I said. And just I'm going to say the old man rant of people need to toughen up. I strongly believe in that. I think there's a lot of people who enjoy doing the group ride and they like to go fast and they like to wear all the latest gear and have the $10,000 bike and look like they're racers. They're cosplaying racing. And I think those people should absolutely, commit to it. You know, it's not cosplaying racing. A race costs $30 to enter, $40 to enter. And, you know, it happens once a year in your town, or maybe once a year, maybe an hour and a half away. And it's so much more than the 30-minute race that you might get dropped in. It's the experience of going somewhere new, meeting new people, hanging around all day and watching the pros race, or, you know, watching, if you're already a pro, to watch the beginner's race. I think bike racing, whether it's road, cyclocross, mountain, gravel, whatever, it's so much more than the act of just pedaling your bike. I think you need to get some thick skin, try it out, do the crit, keep yourself upright, and just see it for more than the $30 that it costs, because it truly is much more than that.
Sure.
100% agree. I am the definition of mediocre cyclist. There's nothing more in this sport for me that is glory, but I absolutely love the community that is built around racing, like going to races and the amount of people that I've met and talked to like after a race. And then turns out that it develops into a friendship is amazing. Cause like you just experienced this thing together. And you're like, oh man, do you remember what happened on this lap? And they're like, right. Oh, that was wild. And you did this. And that sort of thing is like that shared experience that you're talking about is like such a cool thing. And group rides, I love them. I go to them. I wish more people from the group rides would come out to race and enjoy that experience too, because, you know, there are so many angles to cycling and racing is one of them. But it's such a great one. Like there is nothing, the satisfaction that I get from competing and experiencing something new and meeting people. I'm very lucky to be in the position I am and to be able to, to race my bike and to make friends along the way from it. Like I echo your sentiment 100%, Abner. Like get out and do it, because it's so much more fun than just like, you know, it's more than just bike racing.
Yeah, it's community, it's culture, and it's definitely, I think Indiana and Kentucky has a great culture and hopefully can grow. So next more serious topic, let's talk about goals. Does Inky have any goals for the future that you want to talk about?
Yeah. We fight about this all the time.
Healthy conversation. Yeah. So we meet monthly to discuss, like, you know, what's going on, what we can do, how can we best support racing, right? And you know, how can we make a difference? Because we're volunteers. We have a little bit of money to hand out. We get paid small amounts from USA Cycling, 40 cents for each rider per each day. So, you know, an event has 200 people that show up through registration fees, insurance, et cetera. We get $50. So, you know, big money we're talking about here. But one thing we have done and one thing we want to continue to do is support organizations, clubs, races, monetarily in the best way we can. And one of the things that we did recently with this administration was set up a grant program. And, you know, we raised money last year and we were able to give out to three separate organizations in both Indiana and Kentucky that applied over $5,000, which, you know, is not huge sums of money, but I think it's, you know, we've heard back from these clubs and it's making a difference, right? In their mission and what they're trying to do to help promote getting people on bikes competing. And, you know, if we can do more of that, you know, great. And, you know, if we can expand that, if we can just keep doing what we're doing, okay, we would love to expand it and we'd love to give out, you know, as much money as we could to help these things happen. But that's not the only way, of course, we can help, but that is one very tangible way that we found to be able to help out organizations. So.
Yeah. And I made the joke that we fight about this all the time because it truly is the ever present question of how can we maximize our impact? You know, we're volunteers. We don't have a lot of money. We don't like BRAC, the Bicycle Association of Colorado. We do not have a license surcharge. So when you buy a USA Cycling license, I think it's $120 now. You pay an additional $50. So in order to race bikes in Colorado, you have to pay $170 just right off the bat. And then you get to sign up for the races. And BRAC uses that money to fund an office. They have staff that go to every races. They have a trailer with race promotion equipment that they provide for every single race in the state. And we do not have any of that. We are still a volunteer run board. And so, you know, with only about, you know, between $5,000 and $8,000 a year, how can we maximize that money? This is where I will say that I'm really thankful for the makeup of this board, because it's a very balanced discussion that we have every single time. I'm a race organizer and I see everything from the lens of a race organizer. I think it's hard to find barricades. It's hard to fund X, Y, and Z. It's difficult to do this, difficult to do that. And And as a race organizer that does two races a year, it's very difficult for me to justify spending $10,000 on buying, you know, a mile of barricades because my events clear $12,000 in total revenue. So it's just an unsustainable sort of, you know, it's just a very tough pill to swallow when you just don't have the money to do it. And so I always look at it from, can Inky be a co-op? Can the local association buy some of these materials? And then, you know, since it's a nonprofit, use it partly as a tax write-off, partly as a way for us to share the wealth, because we're all paying for it through our USA Cycling licenses. And then, you know, we have Cody, who is very, very pragmatic. And he says, guys, we have 2-year terms. And, you know, if we buy all of this stuff, how can we guarantee that after we're done with our term, the next people are going to be as good of caretakers of these materials or these resources as you are, who are purchasing them and see the mission? Then, you know, James, who's our treasurer, will say, well, it costs money to have that stuff somewhere. Mm-hmm. We need to title a trailer. We need to pay insurance on this stuff. We need to find a rental space. And all of this stuff has additional costs. And so he talks about the impact of the grants and what they've had on some of these race organizations. You know, whether it's a club or another entity. We have other really cool discussions of, you know, what sort of feedback can we do or how can we relay messaging that best suits female riders to get women to race bikes. And Nicole is a really calm voice in the room with experience both at the collegiate club level. She went to IU, so she really understands the world of the little five. And also she races at Marion. So she's also very intimate with the real gung-ho bike racing community. And so she's able to speak on that. And then Justin, you with just your years and years of racing, kind of as an amateur level and your positivity for the sport, you know, everyone's excited about it. Kyle Perry has raced for, I think, 10 years as an elite racer racing across the country. So he brings a different perspective on what needs to be done. So, you know, all of this is like, what does Inky do and how do we decide how to best support the sport? How do we make an impact? And we've just kind of agreed at for now that perhaps it's helping events market themselves, or at least, you know, create a unified front that we can present right now, to really clear up the message that yes, bike racing can be fun. Bike racing can be accessible. And, you know, hopefully over time, this can grow into something bigger than that.
Yeah.
And I'm going to apologize that we've gotten this far into this call and haven't mentioned the rest of our board, because they are extremely hardworking and dedicated individuals. And like you said, very, very diverse, you know, background, and where they're from, different parts of their bike racing journey or bike, you know, cycling journey. So we have, as Abner mentioned, Cody Woods, who's our vice president, James Krause, who is our treasurer, Rob Frangi, who is our secretary, and then our at-large members, Kyle Perry, Abner, and Nicole LaRue. So like I said, we're a volunteer organization. So when we get, you know, people to dedicate and to just, you know, donate their time and their passion, like it's greatly appreciated. And, you know, we couldn't do any of the things that we do without them. We appreciate them. And we, of course, as you talked about earlier, you know, donating your time at races, like, you know, donate your time to join, you know, to be on a board that is representing some cycling entity, whether it's Inky, whether it's Bicycle Indiana. Like, yeah, I thought before I, you know, joined this board, you know, as secretary 3 years ago, I was like, what do I have to offer, you know, to volunteer to be on a board? And it's like, what you have to offer is that you care and that you're passionate about cycling and that you want to do something with that. And that's enough. You know, it's like we all have things that we bring to this. And yeah, so I just want to thank all those people and past members of our board. There's too many to name, but, you know, as I said earlier, this board has gone back a long ways. And there's so many people in the local cycling community that have been part of it over the years. And, you know, to keep it going and to keep it alive is, it's a big deal.
Yeah. So you kind of already talked a little bit about some struggles, but are there any specific struggles, which is then going to transition into my next question, which is how to get involved? So are there any particular struggles that you haven't mentioned already that maybe you want to let our listeners know, just so they can understand more and maybe get them involved? I can add some Jeopardy music if you want.
Yeah, that's a difficult question. I think even us as the board, we kind of struggle, I would say, kind of with the fact that we're caught in the middle of all of these forces that we can't control.
Yeah.
You know, we are the local association, the local chapter of USA Cycling, trying to get people to race their bikes. And it's challenging when there are so many things that we cannot control, that we have to be razor focused on the few things that we can and the resources that we have to address them. So, you know, the funding thing. So how does Inky get money? From every single USA Cycling license purchase, which I said is $120, is their race membership is what they call it these days. We get a small portion. I'm unfamiliar with the exact rate, but it's, Justin can correct me on that, for the exact rate, but I think it's around $20 per license. So buying a USA Cycling license and putting your address in Indiana or in Kentucky is what gets us that little bit of cash. Then when organizers host events, the USA Cycling insurance setup, the way that it works is they call it rider days. And so if you go to the crit on Saturday and you race on Saturday, you completed one rider day. So you could do the Cat 5 race if you won, then you can do the Cat 4 race if you won, then you can do the 3, then you won, and you do the 1. You know, you could do 4 or 5 races in that same day, but it's still the same rider day. So USA Cycling then charges that insurance rate to the organizer, which is about $5. And Inky takes about 30 cents. I think it was 40 cents per rider. So that's the only mechanism with which Inky can collect funds. And it is all disbursed by USA Cycling. That money over time, you know, I think people can look back and even us, we've talked about it in this call. We say, what is Inky and what does Inky do? And at this point, there was a restructuring of the board in the mid 2000s, around probably 2010, where there was no longer a paid member that kind of did the things. It was restructured by the bylaws for it to be an all-volunteer board. And so since then, that money has basically just been going straight into a bank account, and it has been accruing interest over time. And so now we are poised to kind of finally do something with that money. And this is something that the previous board approved, which was that Inky grant. The three recipients of the Inky grant, one of them is the Louisville Cyclocross Collective, and their mission is to simply maintain Eva Bandman Park. And as the organizer of the cyclocross race that happens at Eva Bandman Park, I am so happy that I now have a community partner that is helping me mow the grass. You know, I have to invest money, time, effort into cleaning up the park just enough to host a race there. And if they can maintain it throughout the year, it facilitates that event happening, which then loops the ecosystem back, and people buy licenses to race the Cyclocross Resurrection. People pay a rider insurance surcharge. And so a little bit of that money makes its way back to Inky to kind of continue that cycle. And so the other recipients, one of them was the Derby City Omnium. So Race Penguin is a race promotion company. And I had the privilege of actually working for that event because it's in Louisville. And I was just a race announcer. I was yapping into a microphone for 2 days straight, and I was hoarse by the end of it. And, you know, because the whole thing of road is dead, road is dead, road is dead. People don't want to do road races. People don't want to do crits. They were really, really scared of the pre-registration numbers for that event. enough people, the weather was perfect that weekend, and so enough people showed up on site to register and race. And really, the director and discussions with him, he said that those funds that we got from Inky to host this race were going to be our rainy day fund. Because if it rained and none of these people would have turned up, then this race would have been so deep in the red that we would not be financially able to host it again. And so once again, Inky stepped in to kind of prop and subsidize these events that are just so incredibly critical to our community. Because without the Derby City Omnium, there would be no pavement racing in Kentucky, no crits in Kentucky, and only the Kentucky Open Road Racing Series would be left. And so those are the things that Inky does. And I'm only speaking on behalf of Kentucky. The other recipient was Midwest Devo in Indianapolis that obviously gets kids riding bikes. They have 100+ members, all under the age of 18. They organize or have a direct hand in 4 different cyclocross races in Indianapolis. I guess maybe it's 3 this year, because one was shuttered last year. But that's Brookside. That's the Devo Cross. It is 4. Brookside, Devo Cross, Major Taylor Cross Cup, which is a UCI international level race, and Treason Cross in Seymour. So those are the 4 races. And so these are the clubs that are making enormous impacts in their community through organizing events, through getting people into riding and racing that are just so important. So I would say now that we have a little bit of money to quote unquote play with that we can actually use and leverage, I think our impact is probably greater than it has been in the last 10 years. And I'm really proud to be able to say that now, even though I didn't make those decisions. I'm simply the recipient of a competent prior administration. And I get to sing the praises for those individuals who voted that grant into place.
Yeah. And I apologize for my internet connection going out there a little bit, but I did hear a lot of what you said. And it was even, before us, I was very thankful for the people that have been stewards of our money, specifically former treasurer Justin Kirk, put us in a very good position to be able to do these things that we're doing, and to be able to make smart investments with the money we do have to invest, to then reinvest, into the community. And so it's, I think that was the question originally about struggles that we have
and how to get involved.
Yeah. And honestly, how to get involved. There are any number of ways. And I think the biggest way is volunteering. And that's at, like, if there's a crit nearby, sign up for a 2-hour window and stand at a crosswalk and make sure, people get across the road safely. Go out to a cyclocross race in volunteering. Events are always looking for volunteers. And, ultimately in this sport, like we're not doing this 99% of us for money. And if we were, we'd be really, that'd be a really dumb thing to do. Because there's no money in to win, in bike racing for most of us. So it's like just being involved, it's like, and getting the enjoyment out of being involved and being part of something bigger than yourself. I think that's the best thing you could do to get involved. And if you want to do more, there's always opportunity to do more. Like I said, volunteering and running for a board position of some sort. If you want to host a race, plans, talk to people. We have so many people that have hosted races. We have endless amounts of resources. You want to put on a mountain bike race, you want to put on a crit race, you want to put on a road race, reach out, start the conversation. We'll connect you with people. Actually, really exciting news. I just got an email from a student at the University of Kentucky the other day about them wanting to restart their cycling club.
All right.
And it's like, if you're a college student, like, you, if you think like you can't do something to help the community, it's like you have something to offer. And that's like, that's what I'll say about how to get involved, is any way you think that you want to do something, like, there are people out there that can help you, and we can maybe steer you in a direction. If you don't know where to start, you know, we probably know somebody. We have someone in our contact list that we can set you up with, you know, to help out in any way you think you can or want to.
And I have a whole long list of ways you can get involved. So first and foremost, race your bike. You know, you truly won't understand what this culture is about unless you're riding and racing. And thankfully, the Bicycle Indiana podcast is an opportunity to reach people who may not be racing very much or are doing unsanctioned races. You know, the Dust Bowl is now a USA Cycling sanctioned race,
right?
Whether people realize it or not. And so that's one way to get started. There's other more strict forms of racing, crit racing, cyclocross racing, whatever, more discrete skill categories. But go and race. You know, it's such a negligible cost, really, to pay your race entry to go and have an incredible memory if you've never raced before. The feeling before the whistle goes off, and, you know, the feeling of finishing or tackling something or doing something you didn't think yourself capable of, is just so amazing. So first and foremost, go race. Other ways to get involved. Because we do so much with so little, we have so many opportunities. You can become a race official. If you are going to be at a race anyway, get paid a little bit to do it, right? You're not going to make a lot of money, but at least you'll get your gas paid for, and you'll get your meals, and you'll be continuing a legacy of high quality events. You can volunteer, you can help set up a course, you can help tear down a course, you can, you know, help present podium awards, whatever you may want to do, or whatever role I think you prefer. Any race organizer will be happy to accept an extra pair of hands. And thirdly, is, you know, buy a license. If you really like bike racing, buying a license for USA Cycling is not only funding INCI a little bit, but it's also helping fund the Olympic development program. It's helping fund people to go to the Olympics. Chloe Diger is from Indiana. She has won several gold medals, and you know, she benefited from the infrastructure of USA Cycling to get to where she currently is. And there's other young, promising riders from Indiana. I'm completely forgetting his last name. Braden. He races for
He races for AG2R in France, and he just represented the U.S. at the Road World Championships for the junior division. So
your membership with USA Cycling helps fund that sort of thing, and that sort of those sorts of individuals who we can all be proud of as Americans.
I will add one thing just about, you know, people who are just maybe getting into racing under USA Cycling, and specifically about like the cost, right? Because some people may think, well, it's a lot to say I'm gonna race, but it's gonna cost me $120 this year. If you are new, they have what they call a one-day license for beginners. If you purchase one of those or multiple of those one-day licenses and you realize that you actually want to purchase a full-time license, like you want to purchase the whole $120, any of those one-day license costs that you have already paid, if you contact membership, it will count towards your $120 membership. So I think the 1 day license right now is probably, I want to say it's $15. Abner, correct me if I'm wrong. So if you were to buy two of those and you say, well, I already spent $30, now I have to spend another $120. No, actually, you just have to spend another $90. You just have to make sure to reach out to them and they will apply that to it. So it's like, you don't have to take that huge bite at the apple at first if you're not sure. But when you are sure, you can use that money to towards that whole year long license, and they are good for a rolling 12 months. So just wanted to throw that out there because a lot of people are like, I'm not sure. Is it going to be worth the money? If I want to spend all of it. It's like, you know, if it's your first time doing it, you can always do that. And they also do have, if you've been away for a long time and you want to come back, and maybe you only want to do one event, they do have an experienced 1 day rider license purchase option that is available now. But I don't know if that cost goes towards an annual license if you were to go that route. So just wanted to throw that out there. There are ways to take baby steps in if you'd like. We'd love you to jump in all the way. But you know, if you want to take baby steps, the options are there for you. So,
and for our listeners, I am on the books, have an interview with two USAC officials where we will take a huge deep dive into USA Cycling, even more than what Justin and Abner have talked about, but also on the side of if you want to become an official. So before I have two more questions and then I'll be completely done with all my questions. Think about this for a moment. Think of a memory, whether it's a personal memory to end the call, a personal memory like a bike race or something like a ride that was just epic and adventurous, or something, you know, event wise when it comes to Inky that you want to share with our listeners. And then I have one final question, which will make you both laugh.
I mean, there's so many memories that I have, and I kind of alluded to some earlier, but I think like the core memory that I have about like why I'm still here racing is I actually did my very first race on a 1 day license back in 2007. And it was a long, long ago forgotten race at like Rum Village Park in South Bend. I don't know the last time it was held, but it was the craziest experience of my life. I was just a guy who rode a bike and thought I wanted to race. I'd never been in a pack before. And next thing I know, you know, I'm going like 25 miles an hour. And it was like the most thrilling thing ever. And it wasn't a technical course. It was very safe. It was just like a loop around a park. And I got dropped. Like, you know, I made it like halfway through the race. I got dropped though. And I thought immediately, I want to do that again. Because it was just like, it was this feeling of like, it's something I've never done before, something so new and foreign to me. I was a runner, you know, in a previous life. And I just knew I was no longer going to do that like competitively. And this was something that kind of like scratched that itch. And it was like, I have so much more I can improve on, right? It's like, I'm a beginner at this now, but I see the potential. Now it took me another 10 years to do my second bike race, but I knew I wanted to do it again. And I knew I would get around to it. And I'm glad that I did. And I'm glad that I didn't, you know, give up on it because it wasn't good at it right away. So that's kind of my lasting memory and why I think I'm still here is just because of like how fun that memory was. So
sure. It's a great memory.
New challenge. Yeah.
Yeah. I have so many anecdotes I can't even share. Let me think about this. One thing that came to my mind when you said your story, Justin, Phil Guymon is an influencer. He was a former pro. He lives in LA and makes all these goofy videos of trying to, you know, set Strava KOMs and whatnot. But in his first book, he tells the story of how he became a cyclist when he went to the University of Florida. And he had no idea. He didn't really know anything about racing. He would just ride his bike to neighboring towns. And, you know, he kind of became a pro cyclist almost by accident, just out of sheer talent. And he has this really interesting quote. He said that he believes that kids who grew up playing soccer and who would still fight for every ball and every inch, even when their team was down 8-0, are the types of people that make the best bike racers.
Yeah.
Because you know, in order to be a cyclist, you just have to be, you cannot give up. You have to be that mentally tough rider or that person that will just get up time and time again and is willing to say, I will do that. And I think that's one of the beautiful things, that if you did sports in your prior life, that you get to kind of relive those feelings all over again in cycling. And I've also met a lot of people who have never played organized sports in their lives, and they get the taste of that feeling for the first time riding bikes. I think that's beautiful. Now my actual anecdote, or my cool story, I would say. So I've organized bike races. The first bike race that I organized, I think, was 2014. So I've been doing this now for 11 years. This was when I was organizing the cycling club at the University of Louisville. And I've watched a lot of people get into cycling and drop out of the sport. And I've also seen a lot of people get into cycling and progress to heights that I think not even they knew they were capable of. Brandon Wrights, who races for AG2R, a world tour team in France, has raced my little races. And as a race director, is really cool to see people kind of progress to that level and hone their craft that way. I'm just a fan of the sport. I'm a fan of what people can do on bikes. And the story that most sticks to me is, I think, maybe in 2017, which was one of the last few years that I organized. Well, actually, no, that was at Long Run Park in 2017. It was collegiate and it was normal domestic adult amateur racing. There was a girl who showed up to do the Class D race, which in collegiate is the intro race. It was probably 40 degrees. It was the first race of the day at 8 a.m. The sun had just risen because it was March. And she was wearing only shorts and a jersey.
Oh boy.
She was racing for Northwestern University, and she lapped the field in about 10 minutes. The race was 30 minutes long. Then she joined the next race, the women's B field, and she broke away from that field solo and won that race. Then she got added to the women's A field, which was at the time basically a team time trial of Marion University versus Lindenwood University. And this girl wearing shorts in 40 degree weather rode with that group after having raced twice already that day, rode with that group, and I think finished second or third. After all of that, I pulled her off to the side and I was like, hold on, who are you? Where are you from?
Where'd you come from?
What's going on? And she said that this was her first road race ever, that she had dabbled in cyclocross the fall prior, because she had just gotten into grad school at Northwestern University in Chicago, which is part of the Midwest Collegiate Cycling Conference. She had run cross country at Vanderbilt University, and she had had an injury riddled running career. And it turns out that rider was Lily Williams, who went on to win Olympic gold at the two different Olympics, has won multiple world championships on the track. And she was just so sweet that day that I thought, I'm a fan of this rider, however far she goes. I know she'll end up being like a local or maybe domestic pro, but reaching the heights that she has, and she's still active, is just, I think, at the time, even unimaginable for her. So when you stick around this sport long enough, you get to see that evolution happen multiple times for multiple different people and multiple riders, because it's just a small, close-knit community. And that's why I love race day. I would have never met Justin had we not met at a bike race. I would have never been able to interview, Lily Williams when she was doing her first bike race, and so on and so forth. So I've had a lot of really kind of life-defining moments and memories, thanks to the sport. And the common thread is that they were all USA Cycling events, whether it was a national championship or a local race. That's why I'm so passionate about, people committing to the structure and using that ladder that USA Cycling provides.
That's a great memory.
I love that. I did not know who the rider was going to be. That was quite the payoff. Yeah, she's still riding professionally for Human Powered Health, one of the American teams that, competes in Europe. So it's wow.
That's awesome. All right, last question, and it might, I don't know between you two if it's going to create more of a discussion. SRAM or Shimano? That's what we're going to end on. Think about it. Who's going
to
go first?
I don't have to think very long. I'm a road guy, through and through, road components. So I can't speak to anything off road, but SRAM.
All right. Abner? I like to ask racers this just to see what they say.
This is such a hard question to answer because I have bikes with both. Sure. I'm going to maybe give a non-traditional answer.
I don't know.
No, I'm an 11 speed guy.
Okay. No, I'm kidding. I have friends still on 10 speed. So it's, a thing.
Yeah. I just think that with the move to 12 speed and everything getting electronic, and everyone now making their own compatibility standards has really cluttered the airwaves. I feel like 11 speed is the last generation where stuff was kind of interchangeable, and I can use a SRAM chain on Shimano cogs and a whatever cassette and all this stuff. So I've actually held on to all of my 11 speed stuff just because it's cheap and easy.
The answer, what I'm hearing is, okay.
And the always is don't race what you cannot replace, because stuff just breaks. And, I don't like to cosplay a world tour rider because I'm not one. I can't afford to be buying $500 derailleurs four times a year.
Sure.
I race on the affordable stuff that I can make work perfectly. And whether it's Shimano or SRAM, I can go fast and beat you on it anyway.
That's the ultimate utilitarian answer. And yeah. I respect and appreciate that, because I do also miss, I use some Shimano, rear cassettes. So, I get it and respect that.
I love zip wheels. That's one of the things that I'm Indiana proud about.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you two, I appreciate you taking the time to talk about INCI. Indiana Kentucky Cycling Association is a not-for-profit, INKYcycling.com. I'll put all of the information in the description. Did I miss anything that you want to talk about before we hang up and I edit this and get it out to our listeners?
Did we say race your bike yet?
Race your bike. Become a USAC member.
There you go.
All right. Well, you two, I again appreciate the time. I'll get this out to our listeners, and I hope you two have a great evening.
Thanks so much, Margaret.
All right. Bye. Bye.
Hey, Hey, thanks for tuning in. We hope you really enjoyed this podcast. For more information about our organization and other future podcasts, visit www.bicycleindiana.org. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you have a really great day.